The Monty Show on a Friday for you. And boy, we're loaded as always. A lot of football on the show today. The Mountain West trying to leverage BYU, if you listen to the reports. Get into that a little bit. Is BYU, do they need the Mountain West? Think about that. How much times have changed. Massive day of trades in the National Football League. The Rams, the Eagles, the Packers, the Browns, the Bucks are all straight ahead on this show. Steph Curry's out for at least a week, it looks like. He's got another ankle injury. There's big games in the NBA tonight. It's all good on The Monty Show. Make sure you find me on Twitter, M-O-N-T-Y, The Monty Show. M-O-N-T-Y, The Monty Show, to find me on Twitter. All right, let's get some BYU football rolling here because it's fairly interesting to see the situation with the Mountain West, and now it looks like they are openly courting Gonzaga, as I think everybody is pretty well aware that the Mountain West would love to add Gonzaga into their fold. But there was an SB Nation story that I put about 25% stock into that said the Mountain West wants to sign Gonzaga first so that they can leverage other schools being BYU. I don't know. How much value do you find in the Mountain West, Jake?
I think there's decent value. I think BYU is just in such an interesting position because, you know, whenever we talk about BYU, we always talk about their TV rating situation, how much they're able to bring to the table on that front. I think they have to decide where they want to go and how they're going to get there. I think it's interesting that, you know, the Mountain West is essentially trying to get Gonzaga in to leverage BYU. I think that's an interesting situation, and I think it's interesting that Craig Thompson, if you read the SB Nation article, has essentially not let on truthfully about the fact that they're trying to vote in Gonzaga and they had to push the vote back. You know, everybody agreed to do that. So I don't know. I just think it's interesting. I think there's a good amount of value for BYU there, but I think that depends who you ask.
I think there's a good amount of value for BYU as a basketball conference, the Mountain West. I think there's value in all their other sports, but football, I guess, is the right way to say it, because I don't think that the Mountain West is not an upgrade in football. And I guess the real question as a BYU fan, this is what you have to ask yourself. Is BYU a basketball school in any way, shape, or form? And Dave Rose is one of those coaches that is remarkably consistent. Dave Rose has done a good job. There's no way to doubt the success that Dave Rose has had as the head coach at BYU. It's really difficult to question him there. But it's also really difficult not to recognize that BYU does not go to the NCAA tournament on a regular basis. And I think that's a problem. Dave Rose is a great story, and I think everybody, you know, respects Dave and the stories in his personal life with his health battles, with cancer. And I mean, there's a lot to like about Dave Rose. He is a good basketball coach. And if you are a school that is not interested in winning a national championship in basketball, Dave Rose is your guy. If you are a school that, you know, at BYU, if you want to make honor code, if you want to make excuses that you're not willing to make in football, because in football, the honor code's not an excuse. In football, culture and tough academics are not an excuse. But in basketball, it's okay to say, well, you know, we have the honor code and, well, we have these academics. You either want to win or you don't. And Dave Rose is frustratingly consistent. He's a guy that's going to win you 23 to 25, 26 games a year. He's probably going to take you to the NIT 3 out of 5 years. You'll miss the tournament altogether in that 1 year. You'll have a down year where, and when I say you'll have a down year, you'll win 20 games, 21 games. Because if memory serves, I don't think Dave Rose has ever won under 20 games. But he's not a guy that's going to lead you to a national championship. I just don't feel like BYU basketball is that program right now.
Yeah, I mean, I don't think they're certainly not a national power. And I think when you ask people who aren't around the program, who aren't in that culture every day, they would tell you that BYU isn't a basketball school. It's a football school. And I think that's fair to say. I don't think that's any disrespect on the basketball program. But when I think BYU, I think football. I don't think basketball. So
of course,
you know, so I would agree. I think, I don't know what you do about Dave Rose. I mean, I would agree that he hasn't taken them super far or anywhere near a championship, a national championship, but he is good for the community. He is good culture-wise. He does a great job, you know.
He's a great fit at BYU. There's no doubt he's a great fit at BYU. He's won a ton of basketball games. They dominated the Mountain West when they were previously a member, and Dave Rose did very well. From 05 to, you know, 2010, 2011, I think is the year they went to the WCC, 2011, 2012. He did very well in that conference. He's done quite well in the WCC. But I think the reality is expectations have to be tempered now, because this program is not developing a consistent approach to be one of the best programs in the country. That's not what BYU basketball is about. I think that's very much what BYU football is about. It's why I think Kalani Sitake is coaching for his job this year. I think if they have another year like they had last year in football, Kalani Sitake should probably be let go.
Yeah.
If Dave Rose has another year next year like he had this year and he had last year and the year before last year, okay. Hey, you know, we're going to go, but I think, you know, 23-12 again.
That supports the idea that they're a football school. Expectations are higher. You know, the idea that you're not going to be very good in the football program is just not really an option.
Yeah.
You have to be good.
And this is, by the way, I think it's important to say this because this is not an anti-Dave Rose conversation.
No.
That's not what this is. I have a lot of respect for Dave Rose. I'm not telling you that Dave Rose is doing a bad job. I'm not telling you that Dave Rose should be fired or I'm not saying any of that. I'm saying, hear me very clearly. Dave Rose is incredibly consistent in that he's going to win you mid 20 games every year, 23 to 25 games a year. You're going to make the NIT and occasionally you're going to make the NCAA tournament. And you might win a game or a game, maybe two in the tournament, but that's where it's going to end. And just looking at his coaching record, they go out in the round of 64 on a routine basis when he's made it there. And if that's good at BYU, okay. If that's what you're willing to say, and you're not going to put out a public statement saying, hey, we're fine.
But losing in the first round of the tournament. If you let him continue to coach and that's the farthest he ever gets, you're essentially saying that that's okay.
Yeah, because look, the NIT is fun, and it's cool that they go to the NIT and they do quite well in the NIT. They were in the semis two, three years ago. That's great. I think that's really cool. But the NIT is the third tournament, the second tournament. You're coming in second place.
Yeah.
That's not great. I think BYU fans want to win, and they want to win big in basketball and football, and they want to win consistently. And I think they're struggling in the fact that Dave Rose is not a mediocre coach. He's a very good coach to a certain limit.
But he leaves something to be desired. That's essentially what we're saying.
The program leaves something to be desired because it's difficult to say, well, Dave Rose is not doing X, Y, and Z. It's difficult to say that.
How much does talent play into the Dave Rose conversation, his success versus what, you know, his performance and his achievements versus what BYU fans would like?
Well, I think they have a ton of talent. You know, Childs on his own, we saw Childs this year, and I think we saw Childs in the WCC tournament single-handedly carry that team at times.
Yeah.
A very good player. But what you lose is quality depth. The hard part is that you lose a guy like an Eric Mika, who's a really talented guy. You lose big players. Eric Mika went undrafted. He probably shouldn't have gone to the NBA. You know, like you.
It'd be nice if he could come back.
You miss a guy like Mika, who's a local kid. You know, and they're doing really well. They're doing really well. It would have been nice to have Frank Jackson. They're not recruiting the very best, but they're getting really good talent locally.
So what would be an improvement? Getting to the Sweet 16 would be a huge improvement. That would be a benchmark year for Dave Rose.
Absolutely. Absolutely. It would be, and I'm looking at his coaching record right here in front of me. I mean, he's not a bad coach. I feel like I'm sitting here talking about that Dave Rose is the problem. Dave Rose is is not the problem. You know, it's just one of those, it's just one of those things where this is who BYU is as a program. And it is frustrating. Nick Emery is frustrating. You know, like that situation is frustrating. Mika leaving early, going undrafted is frustrating. And if BYU was sort of pushing for the NCAA tournament, their only route to the tournament this year was to beat Gonzaga the other night, and they failed. You know, it's one of those things that I don't think replacing Dave Rose makes you significantly better, is my point.
But I don't think it's easy to just replace coaches at BYU either because the honor code, all the things that are involved with that, recruiting there. You have to make wise recruiting decisions because it's not like you can just have – you can't have a lot of issues off the field. There's not a lot of tolerance for that. And going to BYU, just the lifestyle on its own is challenging.
Well, look at Nick Emery with cars and boosters and – That's a huge problem.
So what's more important, and I think this is a really valid question, what's more important for the basketball program, having a ton of on-court success or making good men in abiding by the honor code and being good human beings?
Following Gonzaga wherever they go. that's what's important. The making of men thing, I think, is cliche. If you go to BYU, there's so much more than your head basketball coach or your head football coach. But I think winning has to be a big part of the equation. Winning, and again, Dave Rose has won to a certain limit. And that's really the conversation. But Dave Rose, to me, has to do better with the talent that he gets. And he has to maximize the talent that he gets. You got to figure out, like... And the guy that really makes me crazy is Hawes. And I know that there are a lot of Hawes fans out there, but I mean, TJ Hawes is just not, he did not have a very good season. And he was, I know that he is a huge name. I know there's a lot of respect, and I'm not telling you that TJ Hawes is terrible. And he was not very good. The Gonzaga game the other night is exactly the problem for Hawes, is that he doesn't have an idea of what he's doing at times. So he jumps, spins, and throws the ball away.
Yeah.
To nobody in particular. He doesn't shoot particularly well, and he's not particularly aggressive. And it's just frustrating. So is that a Dave Rose issue, or is that just that Hawes is not good enough? Are you getting the most out of a Peyton Dastrup? Are you getting the most out of him that you can get out of him? Do you have a game plan so that Childs is not the only guy who is capable at the moment?
It didn't seem like it.
It didn't seem like they had a plan. No, it didn't. I would totally agree with you. But again, this is a team that was 24-10.
Like the record is nice, but
beating St. Mary's?
Yeah, I mean, that's a nice victory, but I think in the same token, you can have a nice record, but once you get to that game every season, the Gonzaga game or whatever other game in prior seasons you want to point to, where it's, hey, you got to beat Gonzaga to get to the tournament, and they didn't beat Gonzaga. And so eventually you have to get over the hump, and it doesn't seem like Dave Rose gives a lot of confidence that they're going to be in a position to get over the hump. And you can blame talent or you can blame Dave Rose, but there's got to be something done here.
I think they cannot stay in the WCC. BYU staying in the WCC is a huge mistake because it's going to be a one big conference and is inconsistent in important situations as BYU tends to be. You have very little room for error in a one bid league. Now, with Gonzaga not in that league, I don't know. Does that mean you bring in a GCU? What does that mean? Who's going to fill that Gonzaga void? Because somebody's going to fill that void. What's the WCC's not just going to stand pat or fold and go away.
Right.
So there's too many unknowns. You know, if you go to the Mountain West, that you're going to have Gonzaga on your schedule twice a year still. You know that you're going to run into them in the postseason tournament. You know that you're going to have a great rivalry with Utah State. You just know that there is some built-in want to there.
Yeah.
And I think it's really important that they find their way for everything but football, I think it's really important that if Gonzaga leaves the WCC, BYU's got to follow them. And I don't know that they're going to be able to do that with Craig Thompson because that relationship is frayed at best. So we'll see. I think it's a fascinating conversation. We had a Twitter poll. I put up a Twitter poll right when the show started. Find me on Twitter, The Monty Show, M-O-N-T-Y, The Monty Show. And the simple question, should BYU join the Mountain West in all sports, including football? And it is damn close. We're at about 100 votes, and it's 56 to 44 that no, they should not join the Mountain West in all sports, including football. So it's really close. I think there's a lot of BYU fans who'd be just fine if the football program went back to the Mountain West. And I'm telling you, they don't need to do that. Their schedule's really good. I think they're going to be able to make a TV deal just fine on their own. I think with all of the streaming stuff that is out there now, the news came out today that Facebook is going to stream Major League Baseball games this season, which is the first time that they've been able to do that. So you're starting to see that streaming of sporting events is becoming big business. And not to say I told you so, but damn, I told you so. And I think there is a lot of desire in BYU fans to get back to the Mountain West because there is some insecurity in being an independent.
Yeah, I mean, of course there is. I think, I don't know, where do you think the insecurity comes from? I feel like it's a positive to be able to schedule and work with other programs outside of a conference. You know what I mean? To have that freedom. Yeah. And I think it's not like, I think it was last season or the year before, they had a big game with LSU, and everybody was all excited about the big football game with LSU. Yep. And so I think that opportunity goes away if you join a conference.
But look at what we had here in Phoenix. Arizona and BYU at UOP Stadium, University of Phoenix Stadium last year was fantastic. I look at some of the comments on Twitter. James Lawler on Twitter says, if BYU gets a really, really good TV deal in the Mountain with a clause saying they can leave anytime another conference wants them, then maybe. Yeah, I don't think that the Mountain West is going to do that. I don't, James. Casey Finlinson, good old Finn Daddy, says the question is, would this help BYU get into more postseason tournaments with better competition? That's a really good question.
Well, I certainly think anytime you play better competition in those first few seasons, I think you're either going to get, put on your ass, frankly, or you're going to step up and your talent's going to shine out. Yeah. And I think at some point you get over that hump that I was talking about. And I think it can only help you to play better talent, by the way.
It's a really interesting question. I think that's a very, very, very big question.
Because if you're not playing good talent, you got to rack up the wins.
Gonzaga's there, that's good talent.
Yeah.
But think about who's in the Mountain. Air Force, Boise, Utah State, Colorado State, Fresno State, Hawaii, Nevada, San Diego State, San Jose State. I mean, there's a lot of good teams in the Mountain. Wyoming, UNLV. Like, I think it's a decent conference for everything but football.
Yeah.
Because BYU doesn't need the help scheduling football, especially with Utah on the schedule. They don't need that help. They're getting good quality SEC, ACC, Pac-12. Like, they're getting good football teams on their football schedule. Kalani needs to win games. This all goes away. If Kalani Sitake had Ty Detmer, if they had shown any ability to win football games last year, we're not even having this conversation. We really are not. Because the Mountain would never be considering that they could get BYU football back. And I think they believe that if they can leverage, if the Mountain West only signs Gonzaga, look out. Because they have all the leverage. And BYU, I think BYU knows that. If BYU were smart, and Tom Holmoe is one of the best athletic directors in the country, they'd be talking to Gonzaga right now. They'd be saying, hey, what are we doing? There was a rumor floated that BYU was going to start their own conference. Come on. I don't know that that's realistic. But my point is, BYU football is a brand.
It is.
It's a linchpin. It's an iconic brand. You should not go back to the Mountain West if you don't have to. You really shouldn't. Because I don't think going back to the Mountain West puts you closer to a national championship in football. And if it does not, I don't think there's any reason to join the conference as a football team. But we'll see. I don't think staying in the WCC is an option either. I really don't. Hey, let's switch gears and get to the NBA. Find me on Twitter, The Monty Show. MONTY, The Monty Show, or check that. I want to go to the NFL because it's my podcast. We can do whatever we want. A huge day of trades today. And a guy that we talked about getting traded got traded today, and it's Tyrod Taylor. Tyrod Taylor gets traded to the Browns. Jarvis Landry of the Miami Dolphins gets traded to the Browns. Tyrod Taylor and Jarvis Landry are huge upgrades. Tyrod Taylor is a Pro Bowl caliber quarterback.
Yep.
Jarvis Landry is one of the best wide receivers in football. The Packers acquired DeShone Kizer from the Browns.
Which is interesting.
Very good. Well, apparently they wanted to upgrade Brett Hundley because Aaron Rodgers is not a guy that you can count on for 16 games. I just think his style of play makes it very difficult to stay healthy.
He's out there in the open a lot.
Yeah, he gets hit a lot, and I think that's been a problem for them. So I think Brett Hundley played decently well. DeShone Kizer's an upgrade at the backup. So I like that move a lot. The moves that I thought yesterday were fantastic. Getting Aqib Talib by the LA Rams, unbelievable. Their corners are now Aqib Talib and Marcus Peters.
Pretty good.
Pretty good. And you know the scary thing is that the Rams have Jared Goff for 3 more years on a rookie deal. And that's a Super Bowl caliber team already. And this Aqib Talib trade makes the Alec Ogletree trade, they sent Alec Ogletree away to the Giants.
Yeah.
That makes that a lot more palatable because now your defense is
better.
Well,
it seems like they have a plan. It seems like what we always talk about with organizations in the offseason, and we've talked a lot about this a lot with Major League Baseball, but the Rams seem like they have a plan. It seems like they have a direction they're going, and now they're executing on them those moves. And I love that because I love teams that say, hey, we're right here at point A. We want to be right here at point B when the season starts. Now let's get there and let's set ourselves up to get better. And that's what they did.
They did, and I love the move. I like Marcus Peters and Aqib Talib are two of the most volatile personalities.
Yeah.
They're not normal dudes, is the polite way of saying that. But they're also really good football players. So I like that move a lot. I think it's very interesting that you have the Rams now.
They have to be the best team in that division now, right?
Yeah, I don't think is there a question?
I don't think there is.
I mean, I look at the way that the NFC has changed so dramatically, and the Seahawks, the Legion of Boom is dead now, and they released Lane today as well as Richard Sherman today after Michael Bennett's trade. That's the Rams division, and I think the 49ers are a distant second.
Yeah.
Because with Peters and Talib in that secondary, now the offense can afford to take more risks. And you have a really stellar defensive line, and you have really good linebackers now that are going to be able to support good corners. So that defensive line, that front seven, gets after the quarterback. If he makes a little bit of a mistake, tries to throw the ball too early, throws a lame duck, that ball's getting picked off.
Yeah.
Nobody's had more interceptions than Marcus Peters. So Aqib Talib's a ball hawk and a hitter. I mean, I really like this move for the Rams. If those two guys keep their brains, I really like this move for the Rams. I think the Eagles and the Rams are going to dominate for probably 2-3 years now.
Yeah.
It'll be interesting to me to see what the Green Bay Packers look like. Because that's another division. What are the Vikings going
to
do here?
Because the Vikings,
the Vikings are in an interesting position here. They really don't have a whole lot of great options at quarterback. And I'm curious to see how they go about their business in the draft and in free agency. I really am, because there are some upgrades there that I think have to happen. And I don't know how you just let go of all of the guys that they let go. I mean, it's a little surprising to me. They really don't have a quality go-to quarterback. Do they have a quarterback on their roster? Because Keenum and Bridgewater are both. Well, they're going to be free agents.
Yeah.
Keenum and Bridgewater are going to be free agents. So that'll be interesting. I don't know. I think there's a lot of questions around the NFC North. And the Packers today solidified their position. They got better today.
Yeah.
They certainly cannot be done. But if you look at the moves, if you look at the way all of this played out, I think certainly the Cleveland Browns are a better football team today than they were at any point in the last 5 years.
I just think it's interesting that now they're making logical moves. Like, they're making moves where you're like, yeah, okay, I can understand why you would do that.
Yeah.
And now they need to draft well. You can't make more mistakes. You need to draft well.
Well, look at the Bucks locking up Mike Evans. Mike Evans gets 5 years and $82.5 million out of the Bucks. That's $55 million guaranteed.
Yeah.
The Raiders are said to be looking very closely at Doug Martin, who John Gruden knows very well, obviously, from Tampa. They maintained a relationship, and there is rumors that Gruden and Martin met this week. And now the thought process is that Doug Martin will be a Raider. That makes perfect sense to me. I mean, there's a lot of big moves going on, and I think a lot of it, maybe I'm wrong, but I think a lot of it has to do with the realization that there's not a ton of talent coming out of the draft this year. I don't know how you fix it. I don't know how, if you are the Cleveland Browns, you really need to have a good draft.
I don't think you can fix the amount of talent that's coming out of the draft. I think it's simply one of those things where your understanding is, okay, well, this year there's not a lot of talent in the draft, so we're the Cleveland Browns, so we're going to go make a couple moves. And we're going to plan for next year's draft. And we're going to try to figure out what's the best case scenario to get to next year's draft. And it's not really even about, like for the Browns, for instance, it's not about how many games you win necessarily.
Sure.
It's about the position you're in once you get to that draft where there's a lot of talent.
And you're moving in the right direction now. You're moving
in
the right direction.
There's positive flow.
Like the Tampa Bay Bucks. I love, and it's a small move that flew under the radar yesterday, but they brought back Ryan Fitzpatrick. And I think that's a great move. Ryan fits into that locker room really well. Him and Jameis Winston get along really well.
Yeah.
He's not going to win you a Super Bowl, but if Jameis Winston goes down, there are worse options than Ryan Fitzpatrick.
Yeah, there's no question about that. I think especially having Jameis as the guy you want to be the face of your franchise and your quarterback long term, it's good to have a guy like Ryan Fitzpatrick who can ground him and be there in those moments where Jameis is being young and being that hothead we all know him to be. So I think it's smart.
Yeah, I mean, the Bengals today let, you know, Pac-Man Jones know that he is not going to be on the team. They're not going to pick up his option. They'd like to bring him back as a nickel and punt returner at a lower price. So Pac-Man Jones is out there. The 49ers let go of Elvis Dumervil, which was not a surprise. So there's talent out there. DeMarco Murray got released by the Titans yesterday, which was not surprising.
And yet I still don't hear the Arizona Cardinals doing anything.
Yeah, they got to find a quarterback. And it'll be interesting. Again, this is one of those situations where you have to figure out how much money you want to spend and how committed are you to winning a Super Bowl in the next 2 years. Because now this is very much like this NBA Western Conference conversation. When Luke Walton said, hey, now's a good time to be rebuilding because who's going to take the Warriors for the next 3 years? I think that's a very good point in the NFL because who's going to be better than Philadelphia and LA in the NFC?
Yeah.
And I think the AFC is a lot more wide open, even with Tom Brady still playing. But it's going to be very difficult because the Rams and the Eagles are going to have cap space, and they're going to compete. Michael Bennett's a very good pickup to an already very good Eagles defense. So I think that's really interesting. I think that the LA Rams serve notice that they are not going to be anybody's doormat anymore.
Yeah,
and I love it.
And I think they showed that last season. I mean, they were really good last season.
And you have a running back in Todd Gurley in his prime, in his MVP caliber prime, that I think is going to be enormous for them if they're going to win a Super Bowl. Because he's everything. When we talked about Adrian Peterson earlier this week,
yeah.
Todd Gurley's everything that Adrian Peterson's not. He's
Todd
a pass
Gurley's
catcher.
David Johnson 2.0.
He really is. And that's the X factor for the Arizona Cardinals, by the way. A lot of people forget that David Johnson's coming back. But you have Todd Gurley who can catch the ball. He can run the ball, certainly. He's a great blocker. He's a want-to blocker. He's very good at picking up the blitz, so he's a three-down running back. There's a lot to like about Todd Gurley and the LA Rams. And again, these teams that have their quarterbacks under rookie contracts and they're good, Carson Wentz and Jared Goff, that's a huge advantage because you're not dedicating 20% of your salary cap Aaron Rodgers.
Yeah.
You know, think about all these mega quarterback
deals.
Well,
that's not Carson Wentz. I mean, that's really when you can have a quarterback in that rookie deal and you can spend your funds other places and really have a complete football team. I mean, it's a great position to be in, and it's almost one of those things, that's why you have to draft well. That's why it's such a ball buster that Johnny Manziel wasn't what you thought he was. Because you don't get that window of time where you have a cheap option at quarterback and you can be a good football team.
But bad teams like the Browns are willing to take risks on guys like Johnny Manziel. Nobody thought they should have drafted Johnny Manziel there. Nobody. And a lot of people want to compare Manziel to Tim Tebow. Tim Tebow won the Denver Broncos a playoff game. To me, that's all you need to know.
Yeah.
Now, they didn't want him as their starting quarterback, and I understand it. They, you know, they moved on and won Super Bowls. I get it. That's great. But Tim Tebow is not a comparison to Johnny Manziel in any way, shape, or form, on the field or off it. Tim Tebow was a better quarterback in the NFL than Johnny Manziel was. And I hope Johnny gets another shot. But Tim Tebow won a playoff game and beat a really good Pittsburgh Steelers team with his arm by throwing a pass. So I don't know that Johnny Manziel will ever get the opportunity to do that. I really don't. But a crazy day in the NFL. Don't forget, free agency starts on Wednesday, I think it is. So the NFL is going to get cray-cray. NBA, Western Conference. Got to talk about a lot of the headlines in the NBA. And mainly, I think the biggest one right now is Steph Curry's right ankle again, which he tweaked last night, and he is going to miss the two-game road trip that the Warriors are going on. And Steve Kerr made a very valid point. Winning the West is not nearly as important as having a healthy Steph Curry. And I think that's a very salient point.
It's true.
Are you now, as a Warriors fan, or as an NBA fan, resigned to the fact that even though they're half game up, that the Rockets are probably going to win the West?
I mean, you probably are at this point. I think you can't question what Steve Kerr said, because it's absolutely true. Your goal is not to win the West. Your goal is to win a title. And yep, winning the West is a nice chip along the way. And I think I would rather have a 100% healthy Steph Curry. I think saying he's going to miss, you know, two games or whatever it is, I think if he's not 100% healthy, let him miss three or four games.
Do you realize what the 2-7 matchup is right now? It's Golden State and Oklahoma City.
Yeah.
That'd be all right. I mean, that would be a phenomenal.
The drama in that series is epic.
That would be a phenomenal matchup. That would be, off the charts. That would be an incredible matchup. How important is Steph to the Warriors? Because I think a lot of people will knee-jerk and say, oh, he's incredibly important. You got to have him. Yeah, I'm going to say he's not that important. He is important, but he's not end of the world important, because you have Kevin Durant. You have
Klay
Thompson.
He's not LeBron James to the Cavs.
Well, right, and exactly.
And very few players are, but what I'm saying is, when we talk about his importance, with him out, the Warriors are still able to win a lot of games.
Well, and I think that's because they've spent wisely. And the Cavs are built on a bunch of role players to support LeBron James.
Right.
The Golden State Warriors are built on three max contracts in Curry, Durant, Klay. And you also have Draymond, and you have really good role players, and you have a bunch of guys who bought in so that they could win championships.
Yeah.
And I think that is a glaring difference to the Cavaliers. The front office in Golden State is running circles around Cleveland. And the other factor here is that Kevin Durant does largely the same thing that Steph Curry does when Steph's not in the game. He shoots threes, he distributes, he brings the ball up. Kevin Durant is that point guard.
Yeah.
I think they can still win a championship without Steph Curry. If Steph doesn't play another game this year, I still think that they can get by the Houston Rockets.
Yeah, I think they can. I think the only thing that Steph does a lot better than KD does, and it's a size difference physically, Steph does a lot of that probing. We see him, you know, run the ball around the floor. He'll drive to the paint, realize he can't get the layup, so he'll run the baseline. He'll do those little unique things. He'll get everybody watching him. And then that's how they get the easy wide open three or the easy cut to the basket.
Sure.
So that's the only thing that KD doesn't do. I agree with you. I think largely they are the same guy as far as their role on the team.
Now, they're better with Steph Curry. There's no question about that.
Creativity-wise, they are much better.
Yeah, they're better with him. But I think it's not catastrophic. I find it very interesting that Steph Curry is continually getting injured. And I think... And I know it's probably an unpopular view, but I think this is why you went out and got Kevin Durant. Because if KD's not on that team and you are injured, Steph Curry,
you're in trouble.
You're in trouble.
Yeah.
You're in a lot of trouble. Because who's your go-to guy? It's Klay Thompson, and I don't think Klay Thompson's that guy. So I think Kevin Durant is the difference maker there. And I think that's why everybody who rips Kevin Durant for going to Golden State is a little short-sighted. Because frankly, I think it was a brilliant move. I think it was a stroke
on
of genius.
KD's part?
Yeah.
Yeah.
It was a stroke. Because this is, you are forecasting that the quarterback's going to get hit. I mean, essentially, that's what you're doing.
Sure.
And I think he gambled and he won. They already have a ring.
It's true. I agree with you that he won. I think when I think about matchup wise, you know, for let's say against the Thunder, the 2-7 matchup, let's say hypothetically Steph doesn't make it back before the playoffs, which we all know he will, but if he didn't and they had to match up against OKC, I think they'd be fine. I mean, I think your biggest challenge there is still Russell Westbrook. I don't think your biggest challenge is Paul George, because I think him and KD match up tremendously well. But I think Russell Westbrook is just an unstoppable force. He's the guy that you understand is going to get his. You got to stop everybody around him.
Oh, sure. Absolutely.
And I think you really have to suffocate that team. You really have to make it so that it's on Russell Westbrook to score the ball. And I think the way you do that is you play great defense and you rebound the hell out of the ball.
Well, rebounding, I still maintain that rebounding wins you championships. I think that's how important rebounding is. Second possession, second chance points in the NBA are massive.
Killer, man.
Yeah, and a lot of teams don't understand that. Frankly, it's how the Raptors won that game the other night with DeMar's crazy dunk.
Yeah.
And, but anyway, point is, I don't think this is the end of the world. What do you make of the bottom of the Western Conference? This race to eight is freaking unbelievable. If you look at the West, you have the Jazz, the Nuggets, and the Clippers all tied for the eighth spot in the West. And the Clippers have it by percentage points. They're 35-30. The Nuggets and Jazz are. The Clippers are 34-29. It's percentage points.
Yeah.
They're both two games back of Oklahoma City, Minnesota, and San Antonio, who are all essentially 38-29, with San Antonio being 37-28. And it's fascinating to me. If you look at the rise of New Orleans, they've won 10 in a row.
Yeah.
Look at the top four teams in the West. You have 17 in a row for the Rockets. You have 7 in a row for the Warriors. You have 8 in a row for the Blazers. And the Pelicans
have come on strong. Yeah. Man.
The Pelicans have won 10 in a row. Damian Lillard's playing out of his mind. I mean, out of his mind.
I mean, I don't think it's unrealistic to say he's playing at an MVP level, but I don't think he's an MVP candidate this year. I mean, he may be in
not.
The general conversation,
yeah.
But
he plays in Portland, and we've talked about that on the show. That if Dame was anywhere but Portland, essentially, he's an MVP candidate. If he was on the Jazz, if he was on,
yeah. There's no doubt. Yeah.
There's just something where you get lost in Portland. You know, if he was good night, if he was a Laker, if he was a Knick.
Yeah.
If I mean, now his numbers probably wouldn't be what they are because those teams aren't as good. But whatever. Anyway, my point is that right now you have an unbelievable Western Conference, but one of the hottest teams in the West right now is the Jazz. They've won 4 in a row, and I think the Thunder are in some trouble. They got a much needed win, but good Lord, they have not been playing well.
What I'm impressed with about the Jazz, and we seemingly talk about this every single year with the Jazz, their defense is very impressive. I mean, you're talking about holding teams in the 80s for points. I mean, that's ridiculous. That's
they're
almost
the best
unheard of.
Defensive team in basketball. When Rudy Gobert is healthy and the guards are active and Donovan Mitchell is in this conversation, he makes them one of the best defensive teams in basketball. I think they are the best defensive team in basketball. I believe in Rudy Gobert that much, his ability to rim protect. I believe it that much.
Yeah.
What does that all mean at the end of the season? I'm hoping it means that, you know, they have found their way into a playoff spot.
I'm just curious what do the Jazz need to get over the top? I feel like they need one more. They need a star player. That's what they need, in my opinion.
Well,
Donovan Mitchell is that guy. Turning into a star player.
He's that guy.
Bro,
and of course,
2 days in a row, bro.
I didn't do anything.
No, you know,
there's a guy at the door. The Amazon's at the front door delivering a package.
You know what you did? You got your shoes.
I got your shoes.
And so it is your fault.
That's what's happening here. And my wife is diligently trying for the second day in a row to calm my dogs down.
Good luck.
Good luck. Yeah, I got new Hyperdunk basketball shoes.
Yeah.
That's what happened here. So for the second day in a row, this is my fault. This is my fault.
It's a good reason today, though.
Babe, why don't you open those up so I can show Periscope? I'm a huge fan of the Hyperdunk, and we're going to go way off track
now. Yeah, let's do it. Let's do it. Thanks. Let's get into it.
Thank you, UPS or whoever that was.
It was, in fact, UPS. Well done.
Yeah, I'm a shoe guy,
mm-hmm.
and I play basketball probably 3-4 days a week. My preferred shoe is Hyperdunk Low, but I also have the Hyperdunk Flyknit in red, which is a high top shoe. But my Hyperdunk Low tore at one of the eyelets, one of the lace eyelets.
Okay, she's got it opened up. She's got it opened up. We're almost here.
So I tried to get the same shoe. They're out of... I wear a size 15 shoe, so they're out of that shoe. Ooh, that is very pretty. There it is. Yeah, thanks, babe. That's the Hyperdunk. You should watch this show on Periscope. Because you get to see, yeah, this
is the HDs.
Yeah, this is the Hyperdunk High. If you're on Periscope, here's the shoe. But it's a great shoe. I mean, it's the best basketball shoe I've ever played in.
Even better than the LeBron Low.
Oh, the LeBron Low. The LeBron 10 Low was really close. I have a LeBron 12 Watermelon that I really like playing in. But the Hyperdunk is a great shoe.
Yeah.
I love the Hyperdunk. So sorry about the dogs. Not sorry I got a Hyperdunk. Anywho.
Yes.
So Donovan Mitchell is that superstar. But
right.
When we talk about the bottom of the West, I mean, I just feel like Mike Malone is killing the Denver Nuggets. I mean, as a head coach, I like Mike as a tactician, but you got to figure out how to use Jokic. I mean, I don't think they know how to use their players
More? More pick and roll or more just in the post or in the offense?
Well, he's versatile.
He is.
You know, he's a guy that shoots the ball really well. He can go to the basket. He's a big physical guy. He's capable of doing so much. And you're playing the guy, you know, 36 to 40 minutes a night, and you don't have an idea of what to do with him. This is a guy that should be a double-double on a nightly basis. He should be, and really what he should be, is a 20 and 15 guy.
Yeah.
I think his max is probably 22 points, 17 rebounds on a consistent basis. I mean, on a season average, he's a guy that should average 20 and 15 easily. Like, easily. Because he's that talented of a player. But it just gets awkward sometimes. I don't know how to explain the fact that there are just times with Jokic that it is uncomfortable to watch him play, and just the ball comes to him in odd situations. And you know how you're just watching a team and you can just see that
the flow isn't there. It's awkward.
Exactly.
The ball movement's
there's no
not there.
Rhythm.
It's not, yeah.
And Jokic is one of those guys.
Yeah, you know where we last saw that before the Jokic stuff happened with the
Cleveland.
Cavs. Yeah. I mean, that's a perfect example.
Yeah.
They didn't have any of that flow, that energy. They weren't playing as one unit. And I think you're exactly right about the Nuggets and Jokic. I think they got to utilize him on every possession. That's a guy where he should just post up. You give him the ball, and then you run your set. And he needs, I mean, I don't know that he's a good enough passer to pass out every single time or be the guy in every single possession, but I think on a lot of your possessions, throw it down into the post and get some movement.
And we're watching a guy that's coming to life. Nikola Jokic is coming to life as an NBA player, and they just don't know how to use him. I mean, if you look at his game log, it's just freaking awkward. Like, it's 36 points, but then it's 4 points in 26 minutes, 9 points in 32 minutes. And then it's, you know, 18, 21, 28, 30, 23, 21. Like, you just go through these stretches where Jokic, they don't know how to use him. You know, and it's one of those things where I really just wish Mike Malone would figure it the freak out.
Yeah.
Because, not that I'm a Denver fan, but I actually enjoy watching Jokic play. I mean, he can do everything from shoot threes to dunk down your throat.
Aren't we all enamored with the big man who can play outside?
Yeah, absolutely. I think it's why Kyle Kuzma's a star right now.
It's why one of your favorite players is Porzingis.
Yeah.
The stretch four.
Yeah. That's exactly right. It started with guys like Tim Duncan and
LaMarcus Aldridge.
Yeah, don't get me started on Al Horford, please. But I think so. The Nuggets are in an interesting situation. I just don't believe in Mike Malone to coach a team to a championship like that. But I think at the end of the day, I have to favor the Jazz to win that eighth spot. I'm just curious, what happens to the Thunder? Do the Thunder?
Do you think they fall out?
Man, when they're bad, they're really bad. They're really, really bad. Like the Spurs.
And I think you'll see that in the postseason too. Not just a regular season thing. Yeah. You'll see that in the postseason.
They've got the Spurs, and I'm curious to see tomorrow how they play at home against San Antonio, because they should be better than San Antonio.
They are better. But they are better.
Only their record, not record wise.
Yeah.
Not consistency wise. But if you look at their schedule, they have some real difficult schedule coming up. I mean, they've got San Antonio Saturday, then it's Sacramento. That should be a win. At Atlanta should be a win. Atlanta's one of the tanking teams in the NBA. Then it's home for the Clippers, and then a two-game trip to Toronto and Boston, two of the most difficult teams to play against, on the road certainly. Miami and Portland come there. Then you're at San Antonio, Denver, New Orleans, Golden State, Houston, Miami, and Memphis. I mean, you're going to be fighting for your life to end the season.
Buzzsaw, man.
I think there's a chance I would put it at 40-something percent they miss the playoffs. I'm almost 50-50 that they miss the playoffs in Oklahoma City.
Yeah.
So
whose team is that? That's got to still be Westbrook's team, right?
Oh, it's Westbrook's team, but I don't think they know how to play together, which is really odd because that team's been together.
I don't think Melo knows how to play with everybody.
But he's working really hard defensively and playing well defensively.
But see, I get it that he stepped up defensively, and that's been the biggest knock on Melo his entire career, right? We've always said, okay, well, Melo's a one-way player. He's an offensive guy. Give him the ball, he'll score. Great. He gives you nothing defensively. This year, that's not the case. He's giving you more defensively. The effort is there. But he just doesn't know how to fall in line offensively. Doesn't know. I feel like there are a lot of times where he's just awkwardly in the corner.
He's a spot-up shooter now.
Yeah, well, in transition, he's great because what does he do? He spots up on the wing, and he gets the pass and knocks it down.
Yeah, they want him, and I think they need him to be a penetrator. They need it, but he doesn't want to do that. He does, but well, Paul George, that's not what his best role is. Paul George needs to do whatever the hell Paul George wants.
Yeah.
And Carmelo Anthony, I think the dynamic of Paul George and Carmelo Anthony is awkward. That's what I think it is. And it's why you see Russell Westbrook refusing to pass the ball, which I get that. But how do you explain Steven Adams not rotating defensively?
Yeah, I don't know.
That's a repeated problem.
I don't get that. You're referencing the Harden play where Harden blew right by Melo.
It didn't blow by him, but Carmelo was favoring the far side of the lane because that's where Steven Adams was supposed to be. You never give up the middle of the lane, which Carmelo didn't. He gave up the right quarter of the lane, which is Steven Adams is supposed to slide over and force a pass.
Yeah.
He didn't. He never slid over. And it's how do you explain
I don't know, but I will say that Steven Adams isn't the problem on this team, in my opinion.
Defensively, I think he may be. He's part of the problem. He's a great rebounder, and offensively, he's having a great year. But Steven Adams is not a great defensive player. He's not. And I think he is slow to rotate. I think they're missing a guy like Serge Ibaka. That's the guy that, you know, like a defensive minded guy is who they're missing in the 4-5 position. And it should be Steven Adams. And occasionally it is, but it's not all the time.
Right.
And that's a problem. Yeah, I think there's a 40-ish percent chance that Oklahoma City misses the playoffs.
That'd be great for the Warriors.
Well, I think but then who makes it? Because does that mean the Clippers slide up? Because the Clippers, who are wildly inconsistent, are in the eighth spot right now. I don't like Denver because Mike Malone's just not a great coach.
Right.
I don't like what I see out of Oklahoma City. My gut tells me that Utah and L.A.,
to see Utah get into the playoffs and see what Donovan Mitchell does on a bigger stage.
I would not want to play the Jazz in the playoffs. I'm the Houston Rockets, it's a matchup problem for the Jazz. I mean, nobody matches up well with the Rockets, though.
No.
But I would not want to run into the Jazz. Salt Lake City's not an easy place to play a playoff game, period. So, but I think the Jazz have a chance. I mean, they're of course they have a chance.
They just need to win. I think if the Jazz need to put together a seven, you know, 7, 8, 9 game winning streak and get to that point. And then you hope that teams like the Thunder and the Clippers lose and keep losing.
Well, they've won 5 out of their last 6. Their only loss, the Houston Rockets.
Well,
the Jazz now have Memphis tonight. They're going to win that game. At New Orleans, that's tough. Detroit.
But see, like, New Orleans is a good test, right? Because you have Anthony Davis.
Well, he's hurt now, the way.
Yeah,
Boogie's true. Out. Anthony Boogie's Davis out, is less than 100% with that ankle. So maybe they're catching New Orleans at the right time on Sunday. But then look at this schedule. They don't have a difficult schedule. It's at Memphis, at New Orleans, then Detroit and Phoenix and Sacramento and Atlanta, all in Salt Lake City.
Oh, so wins.
At Dallas, at San Antonio, at Golden State. That's a tough trip.
Okay, Golden State's the only one you shouldn't win.
That's a San Antonio is a tough dude. They're
but as
a good,
good as
team.
They are defensively, though, I'm being serious. I think as good as the Jazz are defensively, I would expect them to for sure put up a great fight.
But
if not
that's
win the
also
game.
That San Antonio game. I think is the day that Kawhi's targeting to come back that Friday night.
If that's the case, that's very unlucky for the Jazz.
So that's a tough trip at Dallas, at San Antonio, at Golden State's a tough trip. But you come home for Boston, then it's Memphis at Minnesota, who's wildly inconsistent right now. The Lakers, the Clippers, the Lakers, the Golden State Warriors at Portland.
See, that's a tough way to end the season because both of those Laker games are not guaranteed wins. The Lakers are a lot better.
You better make some hay. That's why and I know everybody's telling me, well, it's March. Well, you better kick ass in March. This stretch where you have Memphis, New Orleans, Detroit, Philly, Sacramento, Atlanta at Dallas, you better make some hay, you know? But yeah, I think the Jazz will get into that A spot. I do. Hey, let's end the show on some Major League Baseball today, by the way, because my guy, Kyle Schwarber, I know we talk Cubs on the show every single day. West Ham United fans are getting in on Periscope. Stop it. West Ham, come on. Come on. We actually saw a West Ham fan, a very young West Ham fan, at the Angel game
very
the other
cute.
Day. He had on his whole kit and everything. It was amazing. But Kyle Schwarber hit another home run today.
Freaking laser beam.
That was a bomb.
Schumacher did not have a good day today.
No, the Angels. Schumacher didn't have a good day. Did you see Ohtani's line against Tijuana?
Who?
Ho! Yeah, against Tijuana. That's
not
good. That's not good. I think the Angels are going to be a much better team. But yeah, I don't know that. I don't know that it's going to be easy. Anyway. I'm really excited about Kyle Schwarber because he looks good. Now he's starting to barrel up, and he looks great in the outfield. He's throwing
and
really well.
And that was
well.
The biggest issue, right? His defense.
Oh, no question.
There's no doubt about it. I mean, losing the weight and that whole storyline, that's great. I mean, he took that upon himself. Hey, I'm going to get in much better shape. I'm going to retain my opposite field power, and I'm going to be a professional player at this point. That's the right. He is at the right weight now, in my opinion. And so if he can play good, consistent defense, I think there's no reason he can't be out there a good amount of the time.
Yeah, I would agree with you. I think that they're
in
really good shape.
They need his bat.
They're in really good shape in the outfield. It's a matter of who's going to play because they have a plethora of outfield
and
guys right now.
And Almora's not making it easy either.
Oh, Almora, no. Almora's the starting center fielder. Forget it. I mean, there's nothing to talk about there. Almora's going to play every day in center. The question is, how long do you hang with Hayward? If he doesn't hit, how long do you hang with him? How long can you say to a guy, you know, like an Ian Happ, hey, we're gonna make you a platoon player? Is Ian Happ a center fielder? Is Ian Happ a second baseman? Is Ian Happ a utility player?
I think he's all of that.
Because I think he has to play every day. So is Ian Happ a left fielder? Well, then what do you do with Kyle Schwarber? Is
Hayward's defense still good enough to overcome the offensive struggle?
Not if he's not hitting, because Almora and Happ are both going to rake. You know, but Schwarber's not a right fielder, not at Wrigley Field even.
No.
That's a very difficult right field to play. I think they have some interesting questions to answer, because Happ and Almora have to play.
Lester pitched really well today.
He did. He did pitch really well. It's a matter of figuring out the bench. Like, I feel much better about the pitching. I spent a lot of time over the last day. We talked a lot of Cub pitching yesterday. And I'm fine. Well, you made the point yesterday that their rotation's not their problem, and I would agree with you. Their rotation's a good rotation.
Do you think Brandon Morrow can get the job done as a closer?
I have real concerns about it.
Because for me, I hear Brandon Morrow, and I think eighth inning guy.
You need 40.
He throws hard, and he's got a good slider.
You need 40 saves out of him this year. You need 40 saves out of him. You have a good setup man in Carl Edwards Jr.
Do you trust Carl Edwards Jr.? I felt like there. Yes. I felt like he got tired last year at the end.
As an eighth inning guy, I do. Well, because he's
but he
a
used,
third
they used
year
him
guy.
A lot. Yeah, I mean, yeah. They used him a lot.
Yeah, I do trust him. I just my biggest question is, what does your bench look like? Are you is Tommy La Stella going to make your bench? Is Ben Zobrist going to make your bench? Well, yeah, you want Ben Zobrist around. Who's your backup? I think Jimenez is making it,
he played
it
well
easy.
Today.
He's your
really
backup
well
catcher right now.
Yeah.
You know, so I think you're fine with that. Your bullpen's, I think, largely set. I don't have any questions
In my opinion, I wish they would sign Greg Holland. I really do, because I think that'd be a great acquisition. If you could have Holland as your closer, Morrow's your eighth inning guy, and Edwards is your kind of when I need somebody guy, you're in great shape there.
Yeah. Yeah, it'll be fun to see what the Cubs do. It really will. Kyle Schwarber is going to make their life very difficult because Schwarbaum is, if he's hitting, he's your everyday left fielder.
Losing the weight makes him a better defender.
And then all of a sudden, and they say that they talk to him every day about his footwork. His footwork is the difference between being a good outfielder and being a very good outfielder. He'll never be an elite defender. In the outfield.
But I don't know that you need him to be an elite defender.
No, you need him to catch everything he's supposed to catch.
Exactly. You need to make the play that you should make.
You need to throw to the right base, because this is the Yasiel Puig conversation. It's great that Yasiel Puig is a great athlete, runs like the wind, but the guy throws to the wrong base. Cost him another run against the Cubs the other day.
Painful.
Throwing to the wrong
Painful.
Base. I mean, it's continuing with him.
Yeah.
Kyle Schwarber throws to the right base every time. Every time he throws to the right base. Albert Almora is the best, I think, their best defensive outfielder now.
Easily.
I think he's past Jason Hayward. So it'll be interesting to me to see what the Cubs do. Just looking at some of these teams in the Cactus League, watching a lot of Yankee baseball, a lot of Red Sox baseball, it'll be interesting to see exactly what it is and how they figure out and how they massage the rotation in Boston. Like, do you have, if you are a Boston Red Sox fan, do you believe that you have a world championship rotation right now? I can't believe that you possibly think you're starting rotation, because I have a lot of reservations, and I should never question him. I have a lot of concerns about Chris Sale right now. He looks terrible. Spring training. The guy will turn the lights on, you know, when the season starts. But look at what you have. Sale, Price, Porcello, Pomerantz, and Brian Johnson.
Pomerantz will be better. I think last year Pomerantz was still that young guy. But I think this year the expectation is that he's going to give you a good contribution. The problem for Boston was that they hit the buzzsaw that was the Houston Astros. And it didn't help that Chris Sale didn't pitch well. It didn't help that David Price didn't pitch well. And Chris Sale didn't pitched so poorly to the point where David Price had to come in relief. So that tells you where they were at pitching-wise.
Bullpen's good. I mean, Kimbrel's going to get you 40 saves. Barnes, Thornburg, Smith, Joe Kelly.
But what good is Kimbrel in the playoffs if you can't get to him? That's my biggest thing.
Yeah.
Like, I love Kimbrel. Yeah. He's probably the best closer in the game still. I just think that... I don't know. I was so shocked that Chris Sale didn't pitch well. Like, I remember us having the conversation that we thought Chris Sale was going to dominate them, and he didn't. They crushed him.
Yeah.
I don't know how you explain it.
And Hanley Ramirez is a liability for Boston anyways. And then comes Kansas City today, who re-upped Mike Moustakas for less money than the tender. They saved money.
It annoys me that they signed him for that low of a number. But he wanted to play. And for a guy...
The owners won.
No doubt about it. The owners have won the entire offseason. It's not even a question at this point.
I would agree with that. I look at what they look like now, though. They look like a heck of a lot more of a contender with Moustakas and John Jay. I don't know about Lucas Duda. I just don't know that the guy can hit major league pitching. We haven't seen that yet. But Soler and Escobar and Alex Gordon's going to have to figure out how to be a Major League Baseball player again, because there are times where he just looks lost. But again, I look at guys like a Danny Duffy, Ian Kennedy, Jason Hamill. Come on. Kansas City doesn't have pitching.
All right.
But they won. They absolutely won. And then you look at the Colorado Rockies. They won too. They added Carlos Gonzalez back as a one-year guy again.
Guys aren't willing to sit, and that's the biggest problem for the players.
Yeah, it's
you're
a win.
Not willing to sit.
But are there hands attached?
Ugh.
We're going to blow your mind to end the show today, because there's a story out of Russia that Jake's about to tell you.
So, in Russia, it's cold, right? We all
really?
Realize that. We all understand that fact of
are
life.
Are you sure?
So, a Siberian fisherman was driving down the road, and he saw a bunch of literally cut-off human hands just laying in the snow. Just all in a line, nice little grid pattern. No reason for him to be there, right? Well, they were there. So, what does he do? Okay, well, he calls the cops, naturally. The cops say, okay, well, this is a government thing, right? We didn't do this. This is the Russian government.
Yeah,
this is the government. That's their problem, right? What does the government say? Oh, well, this came from a lab, and, like, this is no big deal. You just disregard that. It's no problem.
Yeah.
I'm just telling you right
Keep
now.
Fishing.
That's a just add that. That's reason number, like, 671 not to go to Russia.
How many hands?
I believe it was 25.
Just sitting,
oh, excuse me, 54.
Yeah,
sorry.
54 human hands.
Yeah.
54 severed human hands just chilling in the snow.
Yeah.
What in the hell is... hello?
I guess eye for an eye, right?
54 human... Dude, somebody cut off those hands and put them in the snow to make a statement.
And they didn't just throw them in a little pile. They're, like, literally lined up
in the
snow.
Oh, they're laid out. They're laid out. Yeah. It's aliens, dude. They laid out 54 human hands.
I'm good. And then the idea that people are going to Mexico on spring break against the advisory... Why would you do that?
Don't go to Mexico. I'm telling you, if you go to Jamaica, you're asking to put your head in a bag. Because Jamaica is just crime-ridden. Mexico, people are dying in Mexico all the time. And, you know, the Russians are out sarin-gassing people that they don't like. You know, it's all good.
No, I'm not doing it.
What was the one non-sports thing that stuck out to you this week? Do you have a story that's like, you know...
Okay, not to get into politics,
but we're going to get into politics, apparently.
The Stormy Daniels thing is fascinating to me.
Why?
Because it's just one of those things where it's so blatantly obvious that it's happened now, and pretty much everybody knows what happened, and President's still denying it. No.
You know what I don't understand? Why do rich dudes want to have sex with porn stars?
I don't get
it. Help me understand this. Because I don't get it. Like, you know that there's been 100 dudes shopping at that store at the same time, likely.
No.
You know what she's done. And you're willing to, if you believe some reports, pay her $10,000 and give her use of a private jet just to have sex with her?
Nah.
She's a porn star, man. By the way, if you're going to cheat on your wife, don't do it while she's pregnant or about to give birth, because it really pisses them off when you do that.
Right.
They generally don't. Women, here's a... Uncle Moxie's got a note for you on treating your wife right. Don't cheat on your wives, kids. Oh, by the way, if you're going to cheat on your wives, don't do it while they're pregnant or about to give birth. Okay? And if you're going to cheat on your wife, you probably shouldn't do it with a hooker or a porn star.
Mm-hmm.
Right?
Yeah.
Like, if my wife came home and said, yeah, I bought a male hooker. Okay, we're never having sex again. By the way, we're getting divorced. Right? Like, there's just... that Stormy Daniels has had sex with hundreds of dudes. Why do you want to be, like, number 168? Like...
I wouldn't.
Are you a notch on her belt? Right? And this is the Tiger Woods thing. By the way, Tiger Woods is tied for fourth
in the Valspar.
Anyway, point is, like, why are you out cheating on Elon Woods, who's beaten you in the face with a golf club? Why are you out cheating on Elon Woods, probably, with, like, porn stars and Perkins waitresses? You recover from that whole thing. You hook up with Lindsey Vonn, who she says fell in love with you and loved your children. Like, Tiger Woods has kids. Lindsey Vonn claimed that she was fine not having kids because she loved Tiger Woods' children that much. So he went and cheated on her. And I'm just like, hello? Like,
you're killing me, Smalls. Killing me. I don't know how that's possible.
Brain damage. Right? Like, if you're gonna... Why porn stars, man? Why porn stars? Like Bill Clinton and Monica Lewinsky? Okay, I get it. Hey, the Kennedy boys and Marilyn Monroe? Okay, I get it. I get it. Bill Clinton and Stormy Daniels? Really? Like, how does that work? Like, what is Barron Trump hearing when he goes to private school somewhere?
Oh.
Like, he's getting garbage railed. Oh, your dad's out there with porn stars. Like, if that's the worst, too, by the way, I would not want to be Donald Trump's child.
No.
Anyway, the point is, why are you out there with porn stars? I've never understood. This is the Mia Khalifa conversation that we've had. Why are you Rob Gronkowski? Rob Gronkowski, perfect. Rob Gronkowski can get any chick he wants.
Except Lindsey Vonn.
Except Lindsey Vonn, who, by the way, yesterday said, if there's one guy she would never date, it's Rob Gronkowski. It'll never happen, she
said.
Right. Anyway, you're Rob Gronkowski. You can have any chick you want. You're hanging out with porn stars. Help me understand that. Like, I don't get it.
I don't get it either, man.
I don't understand. And the other thing is, I don't want to see videos of my wife having sex with other dudes. Like that. Why can we as men not leave something to the imagination? This is why one of the things I don't understand about pornography. Never mind the fact that they're showing every day there's a new study that comes out that says it melts your brain, right? Never mind that new study comes out every day that says it makes you treat your wife poorly when you're married. Never mind that it leaves nothing to the imagination. Like, it's women, and this is way off base, sorry. It's women that walk around with, like, we're at the Cubs game the other day at Sloan Park in Mesa. There's a chick walking around with her butt hanging out of her shorts. And I'm like, I think I even asked you, is that hot? Because I kind of feel like that's trashy. You know, like, I don't understand this need to show your cleavage and everything else. And, hey, look at that side boob. What are you leaving to the imagination? Because at that point, I'm not thinking about how smart you are or how beautiful you are. I'm thinking, wow, look at her butt or look at her side boob. We've turned you into a piece of meat at that point. Oh, I'm sorry. You turned you into a piece of meat at that point.
Yeah, it's true.
What do I always tell you? You're single. You're not married. You're not single. I'm sorry. You're not single. Jake is not single. Uncle Monty apologizes. Jake has a girlfriend. He's in a committed relationship with the game. No, I'm kidding. He's in a committed relationship.
Right.
You're not married, right? So if you're ever single again, trust me when I say there's currency in an intelligent, beautiful, conservatively dressed woman.
Right.
That's the best advice I can give you. If you want to be happy for the rest of your life, marry a woman that's conservatively dressed, who's attracted, who you're attracted to, and can hold a conversation, because you can figure everything else out. If she's smart, she can get a job. If she's smart, she can raise kids. If she's smart, she can learn who you are. You can find things in common. And if she's smart, she can actually hold a conversation and you can challenge each other. Because again, in the world and in marriage, the magic happens when you don't agree with people. When you're willing to say, my opinion is not the only opinion. And in marriage, you better learn to compromise. So smart people know how to compromise. Don't go for the chick that's wearing the booty shorts and showing her side boob. You're gonna get divorced. Don't say Uncle Monty didn't warn you, because I have. Right? Like, this is not rocket science.
Right.
Anyway, we're 1 hour and 9 minutes into this podcast, so say goodbye, Jake.
Goodbye, Jake. Because it's hard to say no. Yeah, 'cause it's hard to say no. Are you down? Are you down?